Hey listeners, your host Dennis Wisco here. The next series of episodes will be featuring guests from a mobility event put on by TechCrunch. This was a one-day event jam-packed with a lot of forward-thinking mobility enthusiasts. So over the next few episodes, you will get to hear from them. If you're new to this space, I'd consider the next few episodes as industry insight into data and culture. You'll hear how data is turning traditional companies into tech companies. You'll hear how data needs to be collected not just by automakers, but city and transit agencies so that we can achieve this advanced transportation utopia that is constantly dangled in front of us, this Jetsons-like future, if you will. And to this data-driven culture, you'll get to hear how the epicenter of U.S. automakers, that being Detroit, Michigan, how they are evolving in their automotive culture. And so it's really a delight to share these next few episodes with you. And so I hope you enjoy. But before we get to today's episode, I have to share with you a listener story on her most recent car buying experience. Marilyn of Laguna Niguel contacted us and said, "Hey, Dennis, what's the best deal I should get on an Audi Q5? And after some quick searches and just kind of knowing the industry market pricing, I said, "Marilyn, an absolute fair deal would be to get 10% off MSRP. Knowing this negotiation goal, Marilyn went into her nearest local Audi store, saw the SQ5 that she liked, test drove the car, finally got down to the negotiation, and after some back and forth, Marilyn ended up getting her 10% off. So I know she was thrilled. I know the dealer was pretty damn happy because they not only sold the car, but this is a repeat customer, so they were able to keep her for another 3 more years. And so after signing the documents and driving off with the car, Marilyn got a call about a week later to come back to the dealership. Stay tuned for the end of this episode to hear why Marilyn was brought back to the dealer and to hear how her story is not so unique to her. Now, let's get into the show.
You are now tuned in to the Wisco Weekly Experience.
Mabuhay! Bienvenidos! Vitaite, welcome to Wisco Weekly, the podcast where we share the influential voices in the automobility space. I'm here with my good friend, transportation correspondent, and muni bond attorney by day, Mr. Rudy Salo. Rudy, do all of us a favor here, all the listeners here. Describe the room we are currently in.
As I stare into your eyes through this dressing room mirror.
Wow, eyes are bulging right now.
They are bulging. My eyes do tend to bulge. And I am forced to look away because I'm so uncomfortable staring at your eyes through this dressing room. We are in an actual dressing room. It's actually impressive. I have always wanted to be in a dressing room. As many people out there may know, I was a musician when I was younger. And these days, I fool around with things like stand-up comedy and a little bit of acting. Yet this is my first real dressing room. And
go figure, the first time you're in a dressing room is when you're a podcaster.
As a podcaster.
As opposed to anything else.
And I believe in signs and signs from God. So this is a very special room. It's got three big mirrors. We have our own private restroom. We've got chairs. We've got a couch. I'm comfortable, man.
Yeah, we're just kind of missing some like food, some like furry leather around here.
And some of those things from, you know,
Anyway, we have the next best thing here, Rudy.
We do. That's what I was going to say. What we do have is somebody else with us besides just you and me that's filling out this dressing room.
And seriously, talk about a guy who has a lot of impressive recognitions about himself.
He's the star in this dressing room. That's what I was trying to get at before.
Men, women, and children, let me welcome to the show Mr. Brendan Keegan. He serves as the Chief Executive Officer at Merchant Fleets. He's been with them since 2009 as a client, a board member, and a strategic advisor. And on top of all this stuff,
He's been named a Distinguished Fellow by Dartmouth College, a Fast 50 Executive by Fast Company, a Successful Entrepreneur by Enterprise Bank, U.S. Business Delegate to Africa. It goes on and on and on. There's no doubt that Rudy and I are literally students in this game right now.
Starstruck.
So welcome to the show, Mr. Brendan Keegan.
Well, thank you. And when you guys were doing that intro, I was debating, do I like run? It was a little creepy, should've, guys.
Yeah.
It was a little creepy.
It's going to get creepier as my eyes are staring at you through the mirror, Brett. I mean, whenever you feel comfortable, just look right into the mirror.
Seriously, that was an awkward pause right there.
I told it was going to be an awkward pause.
I'll post a picture to exactly the situation in the room we're in. But nonetheless, this room is not going to stop us for Brendan teaching us some things here. So, Brendan, one of the first things actually I'd like to get to with you is that, you know, you have coined this new term, and we'll unpack this more throughout the episode. But maybe tell us about this new word you've coined called fleet tech.
Yeah, it's when you talk about my background, I actually started with merchants back in 2009. I was CEO of a company. We had about 10,000 technicians out fixing computers, laptops, servers, LED TV. So if you have a Dell laptop at home, my former company, we're the actual people who come out and fix it. If you have a Samsung TV, Sony TV. So we had about 10,000 people out there driving vans around.
Wait, hold on. Are you speaking of Geek Squad?
It was prior to Geek Squad.
Okay, because I love Geek Squad. Sorry to interrupt you.
Exact same concept. We were our own company. We did it for Dell, IBM, HP. We did it for the actual OEMs.
Very cool.
We were managing our own fleet, and we were having troubles. So I came across, we did a contest, a procurement, and we wound up going with Merchants Fleet. So that's how I got to know Merchants Fleet.
Okay.
And at the time, they had really moved from being fleet leasing to fleet management. And as I got to know the company over years as a client and then joined as a board, you know, my background's really been in technology or financial services. I don't come from a traditional automotive background other than liking cars. And so, when I was on the board and I continued to look at the company, I tend to look at what's your business model? How do you make money? I really said, you're kind of like a financial services company because you lease vehicles. You're leasing, nearly 50,000 vehicles, but then you put them all in your technology platform. So you're kind of a technology company, but you're not quite a fintech company. So you're more than a fleet management company because you're doing more than managing, but you're not quite a true financial tech company like PayPal. So I said, you're kind of at the in-between. You're kind of between a fleet and a technology company. And I said, there it is.
There's the birth.
So have you secured the rights to that word?
No, but I will tell you, I think we debated Rudy, for a day.
I'm not an IP lawyer.
Rudy, but, get on this.
But at
Rudy,
XP get body, on this.
Do you understand who we're with right now? This guy's a successful CEO entrepreneur.
We're one of the top intellectual property law firms in the country. Go ahead.
And I think we did debate for a day. Is it fleet and then tech with a capital T? I think we had a lot of debate on that. But
that's right. So yeah, how would you define that? Because you do have back-to-back T's right there. So
well, based on my legal counsel that I've just hired, I'm not going to disclose how to spell that. At
good
this
one.
Time.
You guys making backroom deals without me?
I gave him a card.
Wow.
Did you not see that?
I actually winked through the mirror. So it was interesting. So, we're out here at TechCrunch, and I started my presentation saying, hey, does anybody know what a fleet tech partner is? And keep in mind, this is a room full of people that are
technologists.
Technologists, auto, mobility.
Yeah, right.
Nobody knew. And I kind of walked them through. I said, that's where we're really at the impetus. And what I find interesting about it is, we manage about 100,000 vehicles out there for our clients. And they have the fleet managers. They can't possibly keep up with all the technology that's going on out there. So it's our responsibility in the industry to be coming to events like this and finding all the best platforms, the best software, the best vehicles, the best anything ideas, and then go bring those to the fleet managers across the country that are managing oil and gas fleets, that are managing construction fleets, that are managing last mile fleets, that are managing any fleets. And if we don't continue to bring the technology, we're going to be leaving our clients behind. And if you look at the auto industry, it's moved, but it hasn't moved at the pace of technology.
Of course.
I think I saw a quote from the original founder of Intel, and he said, if Rolls-Royce moved at the speed of the semiconductor industry, a Rolls-Royce would now get a million miles to the gallon.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't. But I think now the technology is becoming more embedded in a vehicle. So if you buy a 2019 vehicle, it's got over 400 different data points that it's gathering, that on the back end, managing commercial fleets, has over 140 applications. So we're really starting to look a lot like technology companies that, oh, by the way, just manage assets known as vehicles.
Uh-huh.
And when we look across the vehicle spectrum, those might be all sorts of different vehicles. Drones, you know, it's not going to be long before you see, you know, a cargo van pull up to a neighborhood and four drones pop out of the back and go do, you know, we talk about last mile, how about last block? And so it's we got to be looking to technology more than ever, and it's disrupted a lot of the world. You know, the internet and then the app stores, you know, just it disrupted. I think now you're going to see it start to disrupt the fleet in the auto world even more than it already has.
You know, how do you balance out the ability to go into an established company? What Merchants Fleet is the eighth largest fleet company in the world.
Correct.
So you're going into an established company that has been known more as, let's call it, it's let's just, I don't know what the proper label would be, but again, like commercial business versus now it's turning into more tech business. How have you been able to go into the company and change culture to go from, again, a fleet logistics company to now a fleet tech company?
Yeah, it's, you know, well, first of all, I think having a unique perspective helps tremendously. You know, when I can say as a client, this is what I would have liked. When I can say it as an advisor, you know, this is how I saw the business. So, you know, very rarely, and I'd say, you know, I can't imagine how many people have had a chance to do this where you've been a client, you've been a board member, and then you join the company. So I think having those unique perspectives, I wasn't just coming into a company saying, hey, here's a new concept, let's go. You know, I had a 10, 12 year history with the company from different vantage points. So I think that unique perspective that I had, and it's, you know, I've had a chance to run six different companies, and I've never had that perspective. Usually you're meeting the company when you're starting. So I think having that unique perspective, one, and two, the company had invested very heavily in a technology platform we call TotalView. And we really believe TotalView was the future of the company.
And what is TotalView?
TotalView, so if I were managing your fleet, let's say you had 1,000 vehicles at your company, all 1,000 vehicles would be in our system, and we would know everything about them. Everything from, you know, what you bought them for, how many miles, where you gassed up. It doesn't
braking,
need maintenance,
tire,
anything.
Well, you wouldn't know traction or tread level, but
no,
whatever.
But we'd know idle time. We'd know, yeah, you know, right. Are you a heavy braker? We'd know, have you sped? And we'd just see
so that you can even then project the next maintenance date.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, we would proactively send you driver alerts of when you should be going in.
Uh-huh. Okay.
You know, and you know, it just tracks everything. So
are you plugged into the OBD at that point, or how do you sync a, you know, a fleet of cars to your platform?
Yeah, well, we just register them with us, and then everything from a fuel card to maintenance, you know, just everything everything sits. That's why we call it TotalView. Mm. You've got a total view of every asset. So, you know, as I got to know more about that, I also said, you know, we say vehicles. It could manage assets. It could manage drones. It could manage helicopters. It could manage aircraft. It could manage ships. It's, you know, just so happens that we are in the auto fleet business. So when I would then join the company and started talking to clients and prospects, you know, everybody wants a good lease rate. You know, I'm yet to meet anybody that doesn't want a good lease rate. But when they were,
this guy over here, he likes paying more than most people. He's kind of a sucker about these things.
I like to just give money away.
Yeah.
So what I found is the conversations weren't mostly around the lease.
Mm.
You know, lease, a little bit of a commodity. The conversation was around what can the technology platform do for me to lower total cost of ownership, for me to manage the fleet more efficiently, for me to maybe right-size the fleet. Maybe I don't need. Am I even in the right vehicles? So it all came down to data. It came down to knowing their fleet more. And what I also found is many of these fleet managers, you know, have multiple jobs. They may have fleet and they may have facilities. They may have fleet and they may have part of procurement. So this platform becomes their crucible to understanding. They really, you know, will log in the morning and be able to manage their fleet from their desktop. So, you know, I started saying, are people really not picking us as a lessor? I mean, you know, again, to be competitive, everybody knows what the rates are going to be. It's really coming down to, do you have the right technology that allows them to do the best job managing their fleet? Mm-hmm. So that's where I kind of said, you know, if you really listen to the clients, they're picking who's got the best technology. And by the way, if you've got the best technology and let's say your lease rate's higher, they just tell you, drop your lease rate. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if you don't have the best technology, if you don't have the right technology, it doesn't matter what your lease rate is. They're not gonna go with you.
You know what I'm hearing about all this, Rudy? This is all customer experience talk, baby. This is all optimize the data or take the data and optimize it for the customer experience.
And I see your eyes bulging at the moment. Those are your trigger words for happiness.
So, you know, one of the things that's interesting about you coming into the to Merchants Fleet, as you've said that you were a client, you were an advisor, and now you're CEO, is, you know, a lot of times with these established companies, there's a lot of inward thinking because they've been with the company for a while, or, you know, you're attracting talent from competitor companies. As you move into the tech space, how are you finding it to hire and attract new talent with new ideas to bring into fleet tech?
Yep. So it's a great question, and it's something that that, you know, we turned outward for a little bit. So our theme for the year is innovate, I-N-N-O-V, eight with an arrow going to seven, eighth in the industry going to number seven. So we said, you know, last year was elevate. We wanted to elevate the company. This year was innovate.
Is that elevate with an eight too?
Yeah, elevate with eight going to seven.
Okay.
You know, we've got a 7-year plan to get seventh in the industry.
Okay.
So we defined it as thinking and acting differently in a useful way. And I went and took an innovation program. I've always brought innovation to all the companies I was at. And I said, you know, here's a company that I'm probably going to have to, you know, bring my A game to really help them innovate more.
Can you share this innovation program?
Yeah, it was an innovation. It was at Columbia University. It was with a company, Systemic Inventive Thinking, a gentleman by the name of Yoni Stern. And the term that they used is fixedness. And the term comes from almost the more industry experience you have, the more fixedness you have.
Yes.
So this is where, you know, as a new CEO, you go to a company and say, have you tried this? And they go, oh no, that this is how we do it here. And sometimes the freshness can help somebody. The expertise of somebody can actually work against them. So we laid out a roadmap to create innovation in the company. We then trained one person from every team in the company to be an innovation coach, to go back to their team and kind of break down some of the fixedness. Yanni has come out and met with the top 50 leaders. He's met with my leadership team.
I see. So that's basically who you turned into an innovation coach.
We brought him in. We said it starts with building an innovation culture. And in our logo, we've got a big box and a little box, if you were to see our mm-hmm. Merchants Fleet logo. And a term I dubbed in the company is the big box is the big eyes, the big innovations. Most people, when they think of innovation, think of big innovations. They think of Uber, they think of Lyft, they think of a Zipcar. We're encouraging our employees, don't focus on the big innovations. We're not asking you to do that. Because if we ask you to do that, 95% of employees say, that's not me.
Right, right.
We're asking you to do the little eyes, kind of the little logo. And we actually updated our brand and changed our logo to match this year. We're looking for all of you to do the little eyes. You know, if you've got 10 steps to get something done, to register a car, can you do it in 9? Is there something you can eliminate? What we find is employees absolutely can do that. And those little innovations just speed up. You know, instead of taking 16 weeks to get a car to a client, it takes 14. Instead of taking X number of days or minutes to do something, we take time off. So we first started with, we created a theme. We then brought it to all of our employees. We have innovation coaches. We have innovation days. But on top of that, we really, as a leadership team, try to instill questioning. Just, you know, saying, you know, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? And the last thing that we did, and we kicked this off last year, is we launched what we call the Fleet IQ program. we said, we need more people from the top seven companies ahead of us. We want to take people from each of those and go get the best thinking across fleet. So we set a goal of last year hiring 20 and this year hiring 20. You know, as of this podcast, I think we're at 41, so we're actually a little ahead. So we're taking people from our top competitors. We're taking some of their best folks, and I'm sure they're trying to do the same to us. That's how it works. But we're asking them to come in, and we're trying to understand, how did you do it where you were? What's better? What would you have done differently? So we're really willing to learn from other organizations, and then what works for us.
It makes sense to take or to attract potential employees from competitive companies. But do you find, though, that, again, that still promotes a little bit more of inward thinking than you would like?
It does.
So then it's like, have you tried going after somebody that works at, oh, I don't know, who would be
a municipal bond lawyer from a law firm? Have you ever thought about going outside of the normal?
For naming rights. One thing that I truly failed to mention is in Chicago, we have an innovation center. You know, for technology folks, we found that Chicago is a better recruiting area than New Hampshire. So last year, we switched from having a CIO, which is traditionally infrastructure oriented, to having a chief technology officer, somebody who's looking at technology enablement. And we went out and we brought a person in from HP Enterprise, which got bought out by DXC, a very strong female. So she comes from the technology world, and then she has brought in, you know, a good sized team under her. We've got about 85 to 100 in our innovation center in Chicago that do not come from the industry.
Okay.
So those are people that, you know, now at HP, she was involved in working with United, working with General Motors, working in travel, logistics, transportation. So not completely unknowledgeable about fleet, but we were more interested in fresh tech backgrounds. So she's brought, you know, which many companies already have, you know, Agile to our development. Mm-hmm. You know, we traditionally hadn't offshored certain of our team. We now do. So she's brought a lot of practices that, quite frankly, are 5 and 10 years old from the technology world to our company that many people hadn't been employing, because that's not something that was seen as much in the fleet management or the auto industry. So I probably should have brought that whole point up earlier.
That actually then that makes sense, because I think, you know, one of the problems that I see, let's say specifically if you're looking at, let's say, dealership fleets, right? I mean, a single dealership, it's not a, you know, they're not going to have a whole big fleet operation in comparison if you were to take, you know, Penske Automotive Group and their entire fleet, right? Mm-hmm. But yet, I'm certain that they haven't made the jump or the mindset jump to consider themselves a fleet tech company. But they should, because, again, this is where everything is moving now. So I guess it's just interesting to hear from your perspective how you've been able to attract some of these new individuals that come from, in this case, they come from a tech company into your company. Now, to be honest with you, I'm surprised that someone of your stature has actually sought out an innovation program, because, to be honest, I would have thought that you could do it yourself. But it's probably humbling knowing the fact that you're still seeking education. So as you look at, you know, if you were to advise other leaders who would be in a situation like you where they are looking to redevelop their company culture, how would you advise them to go about doing that?
Yeah, well, the first thing I'd say is, you know, anybody, whatever role, whatever level, you know, if you're 21 years old and you're just starting in your career and they're giving you more training than you probably want, or you're 60 years old and you're in the back nine of your career and you've been doing your job for 10 years, you still got to seek out training. So, you know, every year I do a week of training and I try to go away. Last year I happened to go to Columbia. Now, when I showed up at their innovation program, I actually had this was 2018, my 2019 innovation program ready to go.
Jesus.
So I had it, but what I was able to do during that four-day session is the different instructors and consultants that they had, I would literally bring them over. That's brilliant. And I'd say, well, this is what I'm going to implement next year. What are your thoughts? And literally, I'd have them on breaks. I'd have my PowerPoint up, and they'd say, "Well, you know, Brennan, that's complicated. I'd simplify it. I'd do this. One aspect you're not thinking about is X. Another aspect that you're not thinking about is Y." So I brought something that probably was ready to launch, but went and sat there for 4 days, and really was willing to just say, you know, pull it apart, take it apart. Now, one thing I did do, though, that I'm going to do again this year.
Okay. So this innovation program is, that's what you're doing annually, that 1 week. It's this program.
Well, that was last year.
Okay.
This year, there was a different area I wanted to learn.
Okay.
But what I did last year is, when I took that program, there happened to be one of the professors from Columbia, and he was also a consultant with this company, that just really had a magical way of connecting. And I asked him, I said, "Hey, I'm having a Leadership Strategic Summit in New York in December. Would you ever come to it?" And so he came, and my actual holiday gift to my leadership team, they didn't know he was there. And I said, "Guys, you know, I went through a big process to figure out, you know, what to get 10 people that had everything." And I kind of did a joke, and I said I wanted to give a gift that would keep on giving. And then I had this gentleman join us, and I said, "So, you know, today what we're going to do is he's going to spend the day with us and kind of teach us all how to be innovators." And then I bought them an online, this program you can go in person or online. So my whole leadership team took it. Now, I knew it was a good gift when everyone was really excited, when that night at our holiday celebration, they said, "Can we bring him back for our leadership summit with the top 50 people? And then can we bring him to our client advisory board?"
So, Jesus.
So it, you know, so I went away this year and I did a program on digital transformation. You know, when I just kind of look out, you know, we're obviously in a digital world and it's going to be more and more digital. And I know enough about that to maybe fill 30 seconds of airtime, but not enough. So, you know, this year I went and took a digital transformation and I had a chance to meet a consultant during that. So the leadership team may be getting another surprise this year.
Oh, Jesus. When do you want me to release this episode here? I don't want to spoil it for you. I mean, Brennan, you're playing chess and everybody's playing checkers.
No, I wouldn't say that. I think there's a lot of people playing chess. You know, I got asked this question the other day in an interview. They said, "Brent, when you look at all the top FMCs, who do you think is going to be the winner in mobility?" And I said, "Oh, that's an easy question." She's like, "Oh, I've asked all the heads of FMCs and they all thought it was a tough question." I said, "I think it's an easy question." She goes, "Why is it easy?" I said, "The company that's probably going to become the leader in mobility probably hasn't even been born yet."
Hmm.
It probably hasn't started.
It's because they're going to come in, they're going to start out from the outside, they're going to have that disruptive thinking, just like, you know, Uber and Lyft disrupted the transportation.
Lyft, Airbnb, network. Netflix. I mean, we could go on of, to your point, people that came from outside the core industry that just said, "Why aren't we doing it this way?"
Yeah.
You know, so and that isn't disrespecting Merchants Fleet.
Yeah,
that's not disrespecting
right.
The other seven. Is I just think there will be some companies out there. There will be people, and we happen to be in Silicon Valley. They may be here right now.
Yeah.
They may be in another dressing room.
I'm staring at you right in the eyes. I mean, there's, you know, ideas percolating in the back of my head to be the, you know, to create the best.
Those
FMC
ideas
in the
are
world.
Far back in
far
his
back.
Head.
They're
you
very
see the
deep
size
in a
of
dark
his head.
Cave.
So
it's true.
So I think that all the major brands and companies in there will continue to do wonderful things. But most likely, if I had to place a bet, as I was asked in that question, I would place a bet on somebody completely from the outside that comes in and disrupts. Now, oftentimes what happens is one of the larger companies then acquires them
sure.
at some point in
sure.
time, you know, sometimes earlier, sometimes later. You know, we saw that with Zipcar.
Mm-hmm.
When Zipcar came into the market, had great success, then got acquired by Avis. And matter of fact, we were at one point in time the only company that supported Zipcar and helped put them into business by leasing them 3,700 cars
oh, wow.
in five different cities.
Oh, so credit's all to you guys. And hope you had an equity stake in there.
You know, that was before my time, and I agree. I hope
that's
they
when you
did.
Were a client.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'd like to ask a question. As far as disruptors coming in from the outside, or since we're talking about tech, is there any particular type of map-based tech or map-based technology, or it seems like mapping companies I'm fascinated by. There's one that I help out occasionally. They're called Tip Tags. They have the patent on map-based messaging, and since I've been involved with that company, I've started to learn more about map-based company. We had somebody in here earlier, Avery from Inrix, and we were talking about the differences between mapping and precision, and it just seems like depending upon what line of business you're in, either you think mapping is the next great frontier, or you know it's already been built and we're good there. How does mapping and mapping technology, how does it look by from like a fleet management company like you?
I mean, it's a good question, and my candid answer is I'm probably not close enough to it to really comment. You know, what I try to do, and I say try because it's hard, is to stay up with all the technologies across the industry. And I say try because, you know, that's a full-time job, let alone running a company. So I'd say, you know, I know enough about mapping to say it's going to be a critical component. I don't think I know enough about it to say what level of criticality is it going to play in the ecosystem.
So not necessarily the company that dominates in mapping could be that disruptor that you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, what I know is, you know, is that artificial intelligence, just, you know, I look at other industries that it's come into is going to play a role. And, you know, I'm still really waiting. I think all the OEMs have done a really good job with their vehicles, but I don't think we've seen them do enough disruption from the OEM standpoint. Think of Tesla. Think how they came in. We could name 10 auto manufacturers that had a gigantic head start. And here Tesla came in, and go look at their market cap, you know, if you're thinking as an investor. So I got to believe that a couple of the OEMs have some things up their sleeve that are going to really disrupt, because the power that they yield in trying to disrupt is even greater.
You know, so Brennan, with regards to these, you know, these companies that could change and disrupt the future of fleet tech. I'm going to start using that term from now on.
Yeah, so it's a great term. It really is a great term.
Pay you your royalties here after this. If you were to give away some sage advice to them as a fleet tech company yourself that is collecting data, what are the data sets that a prospective entrepreneur can look at and be like, okay, that's if I do want to disrupt fleet tech, based on Brendan's guidance, this is what I should look at?
I think there's a few things. You know, I would start with you know, one of the four driving forces I talk about often, and that's connectedness.
Okay.
So let's take the telematics industry. For years, the telematics industry was you took a little device, a little telematics device, and it was hardware. You put it into a vehicle, and you went away. You look at the amount of tech. So now if you're a fleet manager, you're sitting there going, hey, I just bought these Fords, these Chevys, these BMWs. Look at all the technology I bought in it. And you're telling me you got to put more technology in it. It's a fair question for a fleet manager to ask. And the answer is, no, you really don't need to. But if you look at your phone, you know, the telecommunication industry has standards that they've all on certain CDMA, TDMA, all platforms. The auto manufacturers don't have a standard platform for, let's call it, their connected devices. So I think one place that there's going to be lots of battles and somebody will win will be who is able to integrate fleets of any brand. So, you know, if we go into a mixed fleet, if I'm managing your fleet of 1,000 and you have 16 different OEMs, and you say, hey, I don't want you putting devices in all these OEMs. Why can't you just take the data from their 16 feeds and put it in your system? And there are companies. There's a company out there right now, Motorque, that's working on that. We're working with them. We're a partner. We're doing 4 pilots with them right now because it makes sense. You know, you look at the amount of technology. Why are we putting more technology into an OEM vehicle? So I think that right there, the connectedness. So the first thing is somebody who can take you know, I go back to my first company I was at was a technology integration company. Basically, what we did is we took hardware, software, integrated it, made it work. That's really what this is somebody taking the 16 OEMs and making it work. And so that will be a winner. The next winner will be, so you've got all this billions, trillions
of data.
What are you going to do with it? like, what, how are you going to help me manage my business better? And, you know, I'm a big fan of visual analytics. You know, write something down and I understand it, show me a picture and I learn it. And I think you're starting to see more companies start to take that data and be able to pump it out in visual analytics. I know we have a consulting team internally and we do scorecards, and that's something we're trying to do more and more. So I think the connectedness, who can solve the issue of being the integrator for any OEM will be a winning point. And the other one, which is a little further out, that war is being fought today. One that's being that's a little further out, that if we were doing this interview 5 years ago, we thought would have already been solved, is electrification. You know, I mean, it would be interesting to Google, when did we start talking about electric vehicles? I'm going to guess it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago. It seems like it's just taking longer for this to catch on. But I do think that that is going to get solved over the next 4 or 5 years. I don't know how. But by the way, if anyone's listening and you know how, that's Brendan Keegan at Merchants Fleet. Yeah. We'd like to make you part of our ecosystem and would like to help scale you and take that's you to market.
Right. No, Zipcar.
No, the electrification of vehicles is something that I'm, you know, passionately focused on as well. In fact, I'm working with a car company on perhaps creating an electric vehicle lobbying group, because there actually isn't one. There isn't one. While the OEMs and the other oil companies have come together and lobbied Congress and put forth provisions to make electrification of vehicles and registration more difficult, I'm not pointing the finger at the OEMs, not pointing the fingers at the combustible engines or their interests, but you know, if you look at the evidence, they've certainly slowed things down a little bit, and that's why I believe and others believe, you know, there needs to be an industry group mm-hmm. to get all of the electric vehicle companies, whether that be cars, trucks, trams, trolleys, together, and to have more of a united voice. They don't have a united voice right now. That's what I think one of the problems is.
Yeah. Well, Brendan, thank you, sir.
Thank you. I enjoyed this.
Wow. Is it insulting to say that I'm pleasantly surprised to have, like, not only just like learned, but like have been inspired by you?
I wouldn't go that far.
I'm serious. I mean, again, I think it's really impressive the fact that you still have this commitment to learning. I think we all say that, and we read books, right? We read books. We attend conferences, but we don't often go out to these kinds of, you know, week long intensive sessions to really do some deep dives. And again, like I said, you're playing chess while everyone's playing checkers. You're coming into these innovation weeks, bringing next year's plans and then testing it, you know. And again, it's, of course, you could implement the plan. You're president of Merchant Fleet, right? You could do mostly anything you want, but yet you're still trying to think ahead. You're getting it tested amongst others to see what works, what doesn't work. Again, I think that's we all know that's what we should be doing, right?
So. Dennis, I'm going to respectfully disagree. Last summer, you know, in some kind of premonition of me being on the microphone a lot more in the future, I took stand-up comedy lessons. So I am constantly committed to learning, and that took, you know, 10 weeks of courses. But I just wanted to say that I too am inspired and will continue to learn based upon this model, because clearly it's a blueprint for success.
Well,
so
hey,
thank you.
You know, listeners, here's a teaser for you. I think Rudy's going to be doing a live stand-up soon, so we'll have to plug that eventually once that happens.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Well, listeners, thanks for tuning in to Wisco Weekly. Be sure you visit us on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, all your social media stuff. Everything is live and active and everything as well. As we end every episode, on behalf of Kelly, Rudy, and myself, cheers, prost, l'chaim, kipis, nastravi, salut, kampai, mabruk, tutsins, gambe, yamas, nastrovie, to the customer experience.
Well, thanks for tuning in to this episode of Wisco Weekly. Tune in to the next 2 episodes to hear more from mobility enthusiasts from this TechCrunch event. But before we end, let's finish Marilyn's story. When she was brought in, they explained to her, and emphatically explained, that her payment would not change. And as a customer who has been brought back to the store, your greatest fear is to always think that your payment is going to change and specifically increase. So when Marilyn heard that her payment would stay the same, she was relieved. All was good in the hood again. However, it should be noted that anytime a residual value changes in this particular case, that does have a direct correlation to the monthly payment, to where it can work in your favor and your monthly payment could be lowered, or it could work not in your favor and the monthly payment could go slightly up because of the residual value that has been changed. And listeners, this scenario, unfortunately, happens more often than not, which is why I'm thrilled to be able to bring to you soon this car concierge service. So to learn more or be one of the first to hear about the official launch, be sure you visit wiscoweeklypod.com and sign up.